with the influence of a weather front, particularly during the course of the weekend.
All right, many thanks, Stav Daenerys. Now on Radio 4, Cheapo Chung continues her reading of The Cooked Seed. Finally accepted onto her course at art school in Chicago, An Chi-min is working hard to cover the costs of her tuition and her living expenses.
I applied for another job. Fabric painting this time. I had to change subways twice, then take a bus and finally walk for 40 minutes. A Chinese lady led me to a basement where rolls of silk were piled high. She said she made women's underwear and gowns. My job was to paint flowers on her merchandise. She explained, "I had a bad experience with the Korean girl before you. I paid her $4 per hour and she only painted one flower. I'll pay you by the piece." I painted flowers in an impressionistic style. It wasn't difficult for me, since I used the Chinese brush painting technique, which allowed me to mix colors in the brush. The owner was impressed. Besides roses, she requested lilies, camellias, peonies, and wisteria. I made my flowers follow the contours of the merchandise. By the time I'd said goodbye, I'd made $24. I was thrilled. She asked me if I wanted to take work home. She'd pay 50 cents for each piece of underwear. Gladly, I accepted her offer and took a stack of fabric with me. I stayed up till 4 in the morning. Soon, I was able to produce 6 pieces per hour. Unfortunately, my happiness didn't last. After a week, the lady said there'd been a mistake. She wanted to switch to paying me by the hour.
$4 instead of 14, I asked.
"That's correct. Take it or leave it." This was the first time I'd witnessed capitalism at work. In the summer of 1986, I sent home a photo of myself. It was the image my family expected. I was successful in America. I wore a red sleeveless top and a matching short skirt. The outfit was borrowed from my friend, Joan Chen. I sat on the shore of Lake Michigan with a giant sailboat in the background, suntanned men drinking beer on the deck. I asked a stranger to take the photo and put on my biggest smile as the shutter clicked. I mailed home the picture, the fake me. The real me was depressed, lonely, and homesick. I wasn't looking forward to turning 30. Discount food stores were the only places I shopped. I made dishes out of rotten vegetables. To hide the smell of my past-the-sell-by-date meat, I marinated it in soy sauce and stir-fried it with ginger and garlic. I found a position as a waitress. Now I was a full-time student juggling 5 jobs at the same time. It was a battle to get to the restaurant in time after classes. I had to sneak out early and run through downtown Chicago. It was in the owner's nature to give orders and criticize. She'd say, "Don't bother to come if you intend to be late again, and no gasping when you enter my restaurant. You're scaring away my customers. No chewing either. It's not my problem if you haven't eaten all day." We weren't paid wages. We worked for tips. I knew I was being exploited. By American standards, I was owed a minimum wage. Yet, who was I to demand such rights? I hung on, learned to smile to customers, and became expert at wrapping stuffed pancakes. My head nodded during class. I was so tired I put Chinese tiger balm on my eyelids, hoping the discomfort would keep me awake. When I felt truly awful, I rested my head on my arms. No quitting, I kept telling myself. One day, I coughed blood. When I saw the doctor, he said I had to be hospitalized. I could collapse at any moment. After 10 days of tests, they couldn't find anything wrong with me, though they concluded that depression was part of my illness. In the summer of 1987, I returned to China for the first time in 3 years. I hadn't been able to secure a return visa before my departure, and there was also the possibility that I wouldn't be granted re-entry. But now I spoke English. I'd fight like an American.
Refusing re-entry would mean denying me the opportunity of completing my degree, I'd reason. When the plane touched down, my emotions spilled over into tears. The moment I saw my parents, I ran toward them. Age had taken its toll, especially on my mother. She'd lost all her teeth and looked frail. My father told me she'd begun to show signs of dementia. I hugged them in the American style. My affection so surprised my mother that her dentures fell from her mouth. At home, I reunited with my siblings. The building had deteriorated so much that the floor had begun to sink, and the wooden staircase slanted towards the right. Our family conversation at dinner was warm. None of us anticipated it would turn unpleasant. It began with me talking about America, about how advanced and wonderful the country was, and what it was like to be treated with dignity, respect, and kindness. I wasn't aware of how Americanized I'd become. I was bragging about my full belly in front of people who were starving. I was neither sensitive nor careful about what I was saying. I didn't pay attention to their open wounds, the fact that two of my siblings had been rejected for visas, because the fact that I'd already gone to the U.S. revealed an immigrant tendency. I thought that the best gift I could offer my family was to share my honest thoughts. I explained my journey hadn't been a smooth one, particularly on the job front, but the key was that I was no longer afraid. I had confidence I could make it elsewhere if I failed in America. I'd go where I would be appreciated, and that included China. My family listened quietly, but I could see confusion and disapproval on their faces. I told them I could see myself as a teacher. I'd like to help promote public education in China. I said I'd introduce American pop music. It would be good to hear Chinese people say, "I love you." One could learn a great deal about democracy and individualism through pop music and art. Finally, my father broke the silence. "An Chi, have you forgotten that you once denounced your teacher as an American spy? What makes you believe you wouldn't suffer the same fate?" I rebuffed him. "It's people like you, who live in fear, that have kept China backward." He looked at me suspiciously. "Why are you speaking about promoting public education in China instead of America? Are you afraid you're not able to make it there? You don't have the luxury to speak like this, my daughter. Let me remind you, our family has a long way to go in terms of paying off our debt and meeting our basic needs." I was supposed to rescue the family. How could I have forgotten? So far, I'd done nothing but harm, ruining everybody else's chances of obtaining American visas. As I continued to explain myself, my elder sister and younger brother removed themselves from the table and began to clean the dishes. I raised my voice as I quoted Mr. Rogers, "The best gift you can offer to anybody is your honest self." It was at this point that my younger sister burst into tears. "Who are you trying to fool? You talk like you didn't grow up in China. How can you forget that all of us have been waiting for you to help us to escape misery? You were the only one who jumped over the Dragon's Gate. You took the spot. And you don't bother to look back to check how low we fell, how hard we hit the ground. You owe this family. When you were picked by Madame Mao, I had to take your place as a laborer. Now you watch me drown and refuse to offer your hand. What have you done in the past 3 years? You studied art. You enjoyed being treated with respect and kindness. You do not care that I don't have a life here, that you're my only hope, that my hair is turning white as I wait for your call. You're nothing but a hypocrite. I hate you." Although killed with guilt, I didn't feel I deserved the accusation. I shot back. "I've tried my best in America. You don't know what I've gone through." I turned to my father and proposed that I give up my visa so that my sister would have a chance to go to America to try on her own. He shook his head. I'd consider it if your returning would guarantee your sister or brother a visa, but it wouldn't. You might end up sacrificing your own opportunities for nothing. Our family might end up losing both the hen and the egg. Back in Chicago, in the cheapest room I could find, a tiny storage room next to a parking lot, I slept on a 2-foot-wide sofa that took up half the room. I'd had to beg the landlord to rent it to me because he was concerned about my safety. He'd intended to rent the space to a single man just for sleeping. I convinced him I was no weakling, showed him my scissor hand, how I'd hold each key on my keyring between my clenched fingers and punch if attacked. Lying awake at night, I asked myself the question, who are you, An Chi Minh? If ever I had to learn what it was to stay positive, it was now. I didn't yet know the American I was becoming, but I was sure that I was no longer the same An Chi who left China. I was broken, yet standing determinedly erect. I could be crushed, but I would not be conquered. And that, I concluded, was who I truly was, who I would be. Graduation approached, and I was still without a job prospect. My Bachelor of Fine Arts degree counted for little in the job market. To maintain my legal status and gain time, I applied for a master's degree and became a graduate student. Although I was temporarily sheltered immigration-wise, I lived like an ant crawling on a hardening walk. Not a day went by that I didn't envision the ultimate disgrace: returning to China empty-handed. A new face appeared at the art school gallery where I worked one fine morning during the spring. The visitor was a Chinese man in his late 20s. My name is Qi Gu Jiang. It's nice to meet you. I arrived from Shanghai 2 days ago. I'm here to take over the next shift. I asked why he'd come to America. He told me, because there's no freedom of expression in China. Without a green card, there's no freedom in America, I told him. In days to come, I found myself laughing with him. His light-heartedness lifted my spirits. Qi Gu told me that Chinese ink painting was his soul's passion. He took a brush and dipped it into some ink. With a single motion, he created a Michelangelo figure with hair-thin lines. The poetry in his work took my breath away. We began to chat in Shanghai dialect, and I asked him about his seeming tranquility. He explained that he was a practitioner of Taoism and Zen. I said, I know about that and all the rest of the Chinese stuff, but don't you worry about survival in America? I just won't let it chew me up, he said. You're robbing yourself of all that's wonderful. Sunshine, spring, flowers, and birds. He listed examples of people who were green card holders, American citizens who lived unfulfilled and miserable lives. It's a downward spiral. It won't end after you achieve citizenship. It's crazy to focus your entire life on securing your immigration status while life passes you by.
Qipo Chung has been reading The Cooked Seed by An Chi Minh. The program was abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions. Now, here sailing by to take us to the shipping forecast.
Thank you.
And now on BBC Radio 4, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday, the 5th of July. There are warnings of gales in Trafalgar, Rockall, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and Southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. High, East Fitzroy 1027, expected fastnet 1030 by 1800 Friday. Low, just south of Iceland 991, moving away steadily northeastwards. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north of Sierra. Southerly or southwesterly 4 or 5, occasionally 6 in Viking. Showers, good, occasionally poor at first in north of Sierra. South of Sierra, westerly or southwesterly 4 or 5, showers, good, occasionally.